Jesus, remember me. Jesus, remember me. When you come into your kingdom, Jesus, remember me. When you come into your kingdom, you just repeat, Jesus, remember me. When you come into your kingdom, Jesus, remember me. When you come in, Jesus, remember us. Jesus, remember us. When you come into your kingdom, Jesus, remember us. When you come into your kingdom. Once again, with those words, once again, Jesus, remember us. When you come into your kingdom, Jesus, remember us. When you come into your kingdom, Jesus, remember all. Jesus, remember all. When you come into your kingdom, Jesus, remember all. When you come into your kingdom. And let's just bless Pam as she's coming up. We'll just hum, you know, hum it, or yes, hum.
Kind of a two-person thing.
Thank you, Shell.
So here to share a few items tonight. If anybody has lost their bell or is increasingly scared of bears, there's some extras here. People have been asking me for some, and you've been giving them away, and they've been getting lost. So I got plenty. Help yourself. Put them up there. These will have to be returned at the end, but anybody need a fan? Yep. Where's the other one? Anybody else? I found it. Anybody else want one? Hit. Nope, I'm not giving you the iPhone. Sorry. You coming around?
I'm coming around to
you. What am I doing? Woohoo! Thank you. Oh, I'm in heaven. Thank you. I always have a few last-minute notes, you know, strokes of brilliance or maybe not brilliance that hit me while we're singing. So a couple of notes here. Thank you so much for singing Make Me an Instrument, because I had a note to myself to ask you to sing that tonight. So, thank you. I'll come back to that. Oh, and this is that problem again. Yeah, it's going to come up. Shelly, you going to take care of it? It just helps me not get quite so dizzy. Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. A couple of things to begin. My focusing prayer. I think I'm going to need it tonight. Can you tell? Shoot, it's probably because my husband's here. My husband Earl is here. Earl. Not to be confused with the other Earl, who's here somewhere too, whom I've met. It's always good to meet another Earl in the house. I mean, that's going to shake the universe. There just aren't that many other Earls. I mean, besides these two, how many of you actually know another one? For sure, for true. Okay, a couple, let's go. Yeah. Well, in our little town at one point, which really only claimed about 500 people, we had two Earls, and more than that, they were both Earl Morse. They were spelled differently, yet another permutation of Earl, E-R-L, but it was very confusing, and the other Earl had a infamous life in Vermont, if you know any Earl Morse out of Vermont, and he was a ski coach and a ski racer and kind of a crazy guy, so for a long time we would get phone calls, "Hey Earl!" And then you have to kind of discern, like, which Earl are they really looking for? And that we were really good friends with Earl, and when Earl got married to our friend Esther, this Earl did the ceremony, and it was incredibly confusing. But wonderful. Great, great, great guy. So if you ever get to meet another Earl, all the Earl Morses I've met are wonderful, but it's a small group. Would you please join me in this focus prayer? God, be in my head and in my understanding. God, be in my eyes and in my looking. God, be in my mouth and in my speaking. God, be in my heart and in my serving. God, be at my end and at my departing. Thank you. So in honor of Joseph, who I saw boldly have a Yankees cup at lunchtime today, yes, you, I have a baseball story for you. One of my favorites goes something like this. You guys ever heard of the Yankees? Well, have you ever heard of Yogi Berra? He kind of is even transcends the Yankees, won't forgive him. So, this story about Yogi Berra and Hank Aaron, who at that time was playing for the Milwaukee Braves. World Series, Yankees, and the Braves. And Yogi Berra was a catcher, for those of you who don't know. And if you don't know what baseball is, I can't help you with that. I'm going to start at catcher. So he's a catcher, and he is a famous catcher. And he was famous for what he said as much as for how well he played. And a lot of yogiisms are around out there, like if you see a fork in the road, take it. I mean, there's just a lot of things that he is well known for. But he was a chatterbox, evidently. And when he was playing behind the plate, he was a chatterbox. And his job was always to kind of mess with the heads of the batters that come up. All the things that we don't really get to see in TV, they're happening down at the plate. So, Yogi's chattering to distract. And Hank Aaron, as you well know, for a long time held the home run at record. I mean, this is like big, right? Big deal, right? So, Hank gets up to bat. And Yogi starts in. It's the World Series, mind you. "Hey, Hank, you're holding the bat wrong. Don't you know you're supposed to hold it so you can read the trademark?" Remember, the trademark's like this kind of oval thing, and it has like print on it, like where it's been. And he's just going on and on and on. And Aaron's just ignoring him. There's silence. Never doesn't respond, which, of course, would be the best plan because you don't want to encourage him. Very next pitch, bam, hits it. Home run. Jogs around the bases to the adulation of the crowd. He gets back to home plate. He steps on home plate, and he finally turns to Yogi and he said, "I didn't come up here to read." That's my best. Similar story, also true, with my son Sam. A couple of you heard it this week, and I thought, well, this would actually be kind of fun to share. We taught our children really early on, both directly and indirectly, that everybody has a job. My job was at the church, Earl's job, you know, at Birchwood. We have jobs. Sometimes we love them. Sometimes we don't. But we do them because those are our jobs. You also have a job. Your job is to go to school. Some days you will love it, and some days you won't. It really doesn't matter, because that's your job. Sometimes you had to say that pretty directly, and sometimes not. Kids were good. They're really good about that. But anyway, roundabout, first grade, maybe second, but not any later. One day, Sam comes home, and he's all frustrated. Oh, he's all twisted up. I said, "Sam, what's up?" He goes, "Mommy, the kids at school, they don't know why we are here." He was getting really frustrated with the lack of focus. My children were, if anything, focused. So I ask you tonight, do you know why you're here? Let me narrow it down for you. Do you know why you're here? Do you know why you're here this week? I mean, I'm not going to ask big existential questions. That was Bert Curley's job, if anybody remember him. Do you know why you're here this week? Do you know why you're here this day? I believe that we are here for a number of things. Some of them will be more personal, some will be more general. But for sure, we are here to pray. And the vast majority, the largest part of praying is listening. So we are here to listen. We are here this night, the night of the vigil, the night of writing our letters to God, to listen. Jonathan Rokes reminded me of a story a couple of days ago, which is always worthy of sharing. It's a story of Mother Teresa having an interview at one point, and he said to me, I don't know if this is legendary or not, but I've heard it elsewhere, so we're going to go with this, that this is actually true. Interviewer asked Mother Teresa, who, by the way, did not grant very many interviews. Interviewer was talking with her and said, when you pray, what do you say to God? And she said, I don't say anything. I listen. Interviewer, not used to such a short, concise, and not terribly helpful response from his point of view, probably, said, okay. And what does God say? And she said, he doesn't say anything. He listens. And then she said, and if you don't understand that, I cannot explain it to you. We are here to listen, to learn how to listen. We practice it by listening to each other, but also listening for God's voice in the myriad ways that our CFO day and nights offer to us. So the title for tonight is Listening for the King, or Listening for the Kingdom, or if you prefer a more catchy title, The Silent Treatment. The scripture from 1 John chapter 1, verse 1. See if you can hear some of my unusual predilections in this. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. See, I haven't been totally nuts trying to get you into all of those senses. It's actually in here. You know, listening and listening attentively can be exhausting. I mean, half listening, not so hard. Really listening, hard. And depending on whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, you then have a whole other landscape of things that you must navigate. And if you're a mother, like how many of you really have listened to your kid? Like there are just times when you're just like only sort of half listening, and then they'll say something and you've already said yes, and then you'll be like, what did I just say? My sister loves to remind me of a time when my oldest son, Ben, who was usually the smartest person in the room, even when he was born, I was in the kitchen with my sister, Leanne, and he comes in from outside, and he's going on, we're like not really listening, and then she's like, Mommy, can I have a knife? And I'm like, yeah, sure, it's in the drawer. And like my sister's like, he just asked for a knife. Oh, he did? Okay. Okay, why would you like the knife? And he said, why? I was not really paying attention. Thank goodness she was paying attention. Normally, I don't give my 5-year-old knives. Just saying. Deep listening means that we, this is the tricky part, deep listening means that we are no longer the center of attention. Remember we talked earlier about prayer isn't about us getting God's attention, it's about giving our attention to God. So deep listening is about no longer being in the center of attention. It's about putting God in the center of our attention. And we have to be incredibly patient. The mystic, Teresa of Avila, used to shake her hourglass to make the sand go more quickly during her time of silence. I love that because I think she's such amazed. Her writings are so amazing. So to find something so human, she used to shake it. Like, how can time stop when you're listening? Does that happen to anybody else, like watching the tea kettle boil? Surely I must have been doing this for an hour. Nope. 3.5 minutes. We sang, one of the things that, there were two songs that I was thinking about, Lord, make me an instrument, and then that wonderful song that we worked on together, Be Still and Know That I Am God. Wish I should have recorded it because I'll never get all those intervals right. Be Still and Know That I Am God. What a beautiful song that we sang. And when I say that to you, Be Still and Know That I Am God, I mean, what does that make you think of? I mean, just let it go around in your head for a minute. It's a great phrase. It's awesome on greeting cards and all kinds of stuff. But what actually is it? How would you interpret that? I kind of think of like sit down and shut up, but you might think of something much more ethereal. Do anybody know the context of where that comes from? Here, I'll try that. Where? Still small voice. Book of the Bible? Psalms. Yeah, we'll narrow it down. All right. It's actually from Psalm 46, and I'd like to read to you. It's Psalm 46:10, but I'm going to back up a couple of verses so you can hear it. Hear the context of this phrase that we love, that we sing about, that makes us feel. Come, see the glorious works of the Lord. See how he brings destruction upon the world. He causes wars to end throughout the earth. He breaks the bow and snaps the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be honored by every nation. I will be honored throughout the world. The Lord of heaven's armies is here among us, and the God of Israel is our fortress. I don't know about you, but that's not exactly where I thought it was. Is that where you thought it was? That's not where I thought it was. Be still and know, in its original context, is really not about peace and serenity. It's about preparing for the struggle. I don't know about you, but that changes it for me. It's about pilgrimage. It's about preparing for the struggle. It's about for God to do something that's going to change the entire world. And how could be still and know that I am God be a part of affecting the entire world? Not just my little corner of it, not just my heart this day, but of changing the world. And what about that other phrase I like? Wait upon the Lord. Where does that one come from? You know, Helen, where is it from? Isaiah. Those who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up on wings like eagles. They shall walk and not be weary. They shall run and not be afraid. There's a great song, I don't know if you guys sing it, but which I really, kind of a newer song, which I love. Strength will rise as we wait upon the Lord. We will wait upon the Lord. We will wait upon the Lord. I like that, right? Wait upon the Lord. Oh, that's next year? All right. Mike, I didn't think to ask you. I was going to ask you beforehand. This, I have a Latin word here, which I don't know how to pronounce. I can make it up. It's attend, E-R-E, A-T-T-E-N-D, E-R-E, attendere, attendere. Attendere? Oh, French. Okay, sorry. French, attend? Wait. The word for wait, attendere, which means to stretch oneself forward. It's the where we get the word attend, attention, or attentive. So to wait for the Lord is to be at attention before the Lord, to be attentive to the Lord, to be attending to the Lord. And that sense of waiting upon the Lord is what we do as we're listening in prayer. And that attending upon the Lord, waiting upon the Lord, we have a great image right in our own midst. It hits you when you go to a really nice restaurant. We were talking about really nice restaurants the other night. How do you know when you're in a really nice restaurant? When you have a really good waiter. We were at our rehearsal dinner out in California that Earl planned with Ben. Really nice restaurant. I described it a little bit the other night. What I didn't talk about was our waiter, our wait staff. We had a waiter named Norbert, which is an unusual name, and he was from an unusual country. Do you remember where? I can't remember. We can make it up. What? No, it was some foreign country. English was not his first language. I'm trying to remember, it was Poland. Anyway, interesting. He was a professional waiter. He wasn't, you know, no offense, he wasn't a kid. He was a professional waiter. This is what he'd been doing all his life. This was his profession. He did it 5 nights a week. Impeccable. And what made him an excellent waiter was he was ever present and totally unobtrusive, and you never knew he was there, but all your needs were met. Wait upon the Lord. That's our one of our images, one of our metaphors of wait upon the Lord. It's that waiter at that amazing restaurant where your ice glass is always full, but they're never in the way, where they don't rush you to take the plate, but it leaves just at the right time, where somehow the crumbs are always gone off the table, even though you know that crusty bread made crumbs, and you say, how did they do it? Because he was a professional waiter, because he was always watching and always looking. Norbert was particularly good in that he had this way of never taking no for an answer, which I also think can be part of this root metaphor. If you didn't like something, he was going to make it right. It was amazing. For example, I have an allergy to walnuts. Well, the house dessert that they're famous for is some fruit cobbler. Well, this particular cobbler had walnuts in it, which I never thought to ask. And I asked him, I said, well, is there looks like there's walnuts in here. Oh, yes. Oh, and I said, well, I just kind of put it aside. And he goes, oh, well, let's get you a dessert then. And this was a banquet. You know, this is not like dining. This is like, you know, the thing we ordered for dinner. Oh, no, no, no. How about this? And how about this? And I'm like, oh, no, it's okay, really. It's okay. Oh, no, how about this? And how about some sherbet? How about some mango sherbet? You know, finally, I'm like, okay, yes. Like, he wasn't pushy, but he was going to make sure that I had an amazing experience. And when we wait on the Lord, like a five-star waiter waits on their diners, ever-present, unobtrusive, watching for the signs, watching, ever-watching, where serving is the primary mode of engagement. When you go, I mean, have you ever had like a meal where, hopefully not at a restaurant where you paid a lot of money, but you go to a meal and somehow the dinner always becomes about the waiter? Like somehow you're imposing to get like a glass of water? Have you ever had these? I mean, raise your hand. Is it just me? Because like I track these people? Okay, thank you. Just checking. And it's your dinner, you're paying for it, but somehow it's about them. And me as a people pleaser, that's why I became a pastor after all, let's face it. People pleaser, I'm like taking care of the waiter. What? You know, I don't want to bother the waiter. I don't want to bother the waitress, the waiter. You know, that's not the point. When you are waiting, serving is the primary mode of engagement. So as we listen in prayer, that's one of those senses. We're in the ears tonight, in case you hadn't figured that out. When we're listening to God, it is really about serving. Saying, yes, Lord? What does Ria Zekic say her favorite prayer is? Huh? I think it was huh, or something like that. Anyway, we are so prone to somehow turn it around that it's about us. And we're human, and God's so kind and patient with us. But if we really want to move deeper in and farther out, God invites us to wait on God. Here's just a little fun little experiment. Let's see if it works. If you take your ears, don't take them off, but if you kind of cup your ears for a minute, and I'll be quiet for a minute, just play with your ears and see if you can make yourself hear your own heartbeat. Or the whistle of the wind. Sometimes you can do it. If you press really hard. Anybody hear their heartbeat? You can do it. Yeah, if you really press, you can try it later while I'm talking. It won't bother me. My mentor, Len Sweet, says, we have to have a bent ear to hear God, which means we're doing this. Because now do this. Now put your hand behind your ear like that and just kind of like make it like a Dumbo ear. And if I keep talking, it really changes. Can you hear me different? Just go ahead and play with it, you know, come on. We're here. It's all among friends. See, the postures of your ears really matter. Did you know your ears had a posture? They do. You can just go ahead and play with that all night long. It's really, the kids in particular, it's like what? BFG? What's that? Thank you. Thank you. Ask him. Listening. There are ways in which we realize that we're really only listening to our own heartbeat. We're really only listening to ourselves. And there are ways in which we tune our spiritual ears as we tune these ears, these cute things. God spoke, and the universe came to be. And I believe that God is still speaking. Do you believe that? God is still speaking?
Yes.
And are you listening? A far more difficult question to answer. Where's Steve Hubbard, usually? Steve, I apologize because I have a note here that I was supposed to check something out to really impress you, and I didn't do it. And you can ask him about this later because I bet you he knows a lot about that satellite that went by Pluto not too long ago, a week or so ago, and the listening that had. Do you want to come up and tell how the listening and how it went down and how it had, they had to get it back up? I'm totally putting you on the spot, but yeah, okay. You goes, I don't know. I don't think I was listening. No, he's sinking in his ear. Well, anyway, it was for you, and maybe I'll get it together. There was this kind of satellite that kind of has been going out into deep space, and it was getting ready to kind of go by Pluto, and so they were kind of giving it all these directions, and evidently they kind of overloaded it, and it shut itself down, which was really a problem, because it's not like you can drive out and fix it. And so they had to kind of reboot it, and it's so far out, there's this big, long time delay in between, and were they going to be able to reboot it and get it back up before it passed out entirely beyond what they needed? It was all about listening, and there were the scientists who've been working on this for years and years and years, like years, and they're sleeping on the floor of their offices of the lab and stuff. Fascinating articles and things about it. Anybody else paid attention to that at all? Anybody else follow? Okay, good. Okay. That was all about listening. It was all about listening and the time delays of listening. The human brain is wired for sound. And so unless something goes really wrong, which it does occasionally, unfortunately, human brain is wired for sound. That's why we remember jingles more than texts. That's why when we set words to music or Bible verses to music, we can remember them better than if we just have to sit down and memorize them Bible verses. Anybody know a jingle that has stuck with them despite your best attempts to forget it? Oh, wait, one at a time, because these are going to be rich. What? O-S-E-A-R, my baloney has a second name, it's M-A-Y-E-R. Oh, I love to eat it every day, and if you ask me why, I say, 'cause Oscar Mayer has a way with B-O-L-O-G-N-A. That's beautiful. Now, when was the last time like that was actually on the air? Okay, you got one, Ember? That's a scary kind of creepy song. K-A-R-S, cars for kids. Yes, K-A-R-S. Do you agree with that? It's a little bit creepy, that one? Yeah, something about that. But it's rememberable. Oh, Helen. Somebody, thank you. I did not know that one. I like it, though. Okay, Jonathan. Awesome! So you could even memorize numbers when you set them to music. All right, one or two more. What, Carol? That's awesome. Yes, Earl.
So get up and get away to Donald's.
Yes! The kids in the back are like, We have no idea what you're doing. Do you kids in the back have a jingle you'd like to contribute that was written in the past, you know, like 30 years instead? Christy, anybody? Caitlin, you got to be loud, though. Ba-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum. There you go. You have to be louder. Who is it? What? I don't know that one. Yeah, la 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 la. Oh, well, last one. Oh, brushy, brushy, brush. Rusty. Anybody remember that one that's nearer to the mic? Brushy, brushy, brushy. Pat's like, just stop. Anders. That's a real jingle. I mean, you may wake up in the morning. Oh, the people are liking this. Yes.
Sometimes you feel like enough.
Sometimes you don't. Yeah. Mounds don't. Okay, Arden. K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E. You guys know that one? Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse. Forever let us hold our banners high.
High, high, high.
Come along and sing a song and join the jamboree. M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U. You know, maybe my brain is not as scary a place for you as I once thought, because that's a lot of stuff in there. It's awesome! Have you ever heard of singing cells? Singing cells, C-E-L-L-S? The idea of singing cells? It's a new, kind of really relatively new branch of science called sonocytology, in which it's the exploration of the vibrational life of cells. I'm not kidding about this, by the way. And it's we're learning a lot about life at a cellular level. For example, if you take a cell, which is alive, human cell, plant cell, you douse it with alcohol, the frequency of the vibrations increase as if the cell is screaming. You change the temperature of a cell, and you can speed up or speed down the harmonics in the cell. When a cell dies, these vibrations flatline. So. I don't know anything about that. The poets among us might say that our cells sing, that every person sings their life through their cells, or as Eric Clapton says, music is everyone's first language. I'm not going to get this quite right, Becky, because there's a few words that I have forgotten, and I've had to make them up. So if you know the real song, the real words, you just fill it in. But I learned this from Becky at Arrowhead Ranch a couple years ago. Every little cell in my body is happy. Every little cell in my body is well. Every little cell in my body is happy. Every little cell in my body is well. I'm so glad, I'm so swell. Every little cell in my body is well. I'm so glad, I feel so good. Every little cell in my body is well. See? Sonocytology. CFO invented it. A number of years, within the last 5 years, I had an opportunity to go to a retreat down in Duxbury, Massachusetts, at a Catholic retreat center for women in ministry. And the reason that I went was because I had heard this woman, Bloom, last name is Bloom, anyway, from Rhode Island, was doing a retreat on sound and on gong baths. Has anybody ever been to a sound bath, sometimes called a gong bath? If you ever have an opportunity, jump at it. Doesn't happen very often. And I'm going to explain to you what it is, because it's pretty phenomenal. And I think it would actually go along with kind of CFO in many, many ways. During the day, we learned a lot about the physics of sound, the understanding of sound as vibrations, some of those kinds of things. And then in the afternoon, she pulled out these huge Eastern and often Tibetan gongs. They come on these stands, and they're big. They're big. How many of you have heard of singing bowls? Okay, same concept, just like on steroids. Big, 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 okay? And she had a number of them, and they're very, very expensive, obviously. And then we would lay on the floor comfortably, and she would play the gongs. And it was like improvisational, like jazz. And she would just kind of observe us, and she would play. And they would resonate, if any of you have kind of experienced a singing bowl kind of effect, or even in a great choir when you're all kind of making music together and everything just kind of coalesces. The vibrations of these gongs would just, I've never felt anything like it. It was as if that song came true in my body. Every cell in my body was vibrating in relationship to the resonance of these gongs. And I went places that were just amazing. I mean, just in terms of, my whole body just felt like it was finally, like, in the right place. Everything was in the order it should be in. I know it doesn't make sense, but it's CFO. It doesn't have to make sense. And the healing that I felt within my body as finally all those cells could sing together in harmony, in the way they were supposed to. The sense of well-being, the sense of peace was amazing. And it was so amazing. I was in a pretty tough time in my life. I was feeling a little raw. It was actually the winter after my dad died, now that I think about it. Let me put this together. And oftentimes I just said, I'm a kind of a people pleaser. I like to take care of people. It's kind of how I get fed, right? Take care of people. I went to this retreat, and I, like, didn't talk to anybody. I didn't, like, try to get involved in people's lives or, like, try to, like, be pastoral. I mean, there were a bunch of pastors, so they're kind of on their own. But I was so different than I normally am because I just needed to be healed. I don't know if that makes any sense. I just needed to be healed. And the sound, just listening, and not just hearing then with my ears, but hearing with my whole body. Have you ever tried to hear with your elbow? Try it. It's CFO, for goodness sakes. Give it a whirl. I have no idea. I just made it up. You could, actually you can. Actually you can. You can ring the gong and you can put it on your phone. Like a tuning fork? Like a tuning fork. Oh, I shouldn't tease you so much. Sound researcher Joshua Lead says this. Sound, this is an analogy. Sound is to the nervous system what food is to our physical bodies. Food provides nourishment at the cellular level of the organism, and sound feeds us the electrical impulses that charge the neocortex, which is part of the challenge when, I don't know where Rosemary is right now, my good. When you have folks who are hearing impaired or deaf, I mean, it's more than just that they can't hear. There's a whole arsenal, there's a whole repertoire of things that come with that because our bodies are wired for sound. What happens when people get hard of hearing? I wrote in here what happens when older people get hard of hearing, but I'm taking that word out because it's getting too personal. What happens when people get hard of hearing? How do they start to behave? They what? They get introverted? They pretend they can hear. Yeah? Anything else up? They get irritable. Yes. My mother's getting irritable. Ask you to repeat. Assume that other people are just not talking loud enough. The problem is with them, not with me. And how often do we blame God because we cannot hear him? Look at Joe. What? How often do we blame God because we cannot hear him? We get hard of hearing. We get hard of hearing. I stake my life on the belief that God is still speaking through other people in my life, through nature, through dreams, through scripture, through prayer, through hymns. CFO is a wonderful place to explore this in a womb of trust. In so many places in Christianity today, perhaps even in your own church, it's all about what you believe. why isn't Christianity about what you hear or what you can hear? Do you hear what the world hears, or do you hear something else? Said the little lamb to the shepherd boy, do you hear what I hear? Do you hear what I hear? It's an echo, right? Ringing through the sky, shepherd boy, do you hear what I hear? A song, high above the trees with a voice as big as the sea. With a voice as big as the sea. I have heard it said that what we hear from God is a sacred echo. I like that. A sacred echo. Meaning we hear, we may not always hear it all, but we hear enough to keep wanting to push in and hear more. And hear that echo as it comes around the lake or comes around the canyon. We want to push in. I mean, if God just always used a like microphone or megaphone like I am right now, how hard is it? I mean, even those of you in the back can hear me. Nice! God doesn't do that. I believe that God is still speaking. Oh, remember you, bell? Where else do you hear the wonderful story of the bell? Remember the Polar Express? Right? And when they got too old, they couldn't hear the bell anymore. You still hear the bell? I still hear the bell. I long to hear the bell. It'll make me cry the day when I can't hear the bell anymore. I'm not going to get there. But why do we want to hear from God? And why do we want to hear from God tonight in this vigil? And if you haven't signed up for a time, sign up for a time, add a time, spend some time which you have sat down and said, Lord, I'm here. I want to be with you. Whether you have an agenda or not. Even better if you don't. Then you can really wait. Lord, I'm here. I'm waiting on you. But why do you want to hear from God? So you can be cool? So you can say, hey, I heard from God last night. I hope not. I mean, why do you want to hear from God? All right, I will actually ask this as a non-rhetorical question. Why do you want to hear from God? All right? That's a question for you to ask. Ask yourself that question tonight. Maybe that's a question you can ask in your prayer vigil time. God, I've been told all my life I'm supposed to hear from you. Why do I want to hear from you? I would posit to you that we want to hear from God so we can obey God. If you want to hear from God for some other reason, I wouldn't be surprised if you're not hearing God all that well. Because once you hear from God, obedience is the only holy response. Hence, our ambivalence about really wanting to hear from God. I did share with you my black bear story. Afraid he'll show up, afraid he won't. Hence, our insecurity about whether what we just heard is from God or not. Especially if the word we thought we heard requires work. Oh, let me take that to prayer again. I'm not sure I really heard that because that sounds like a lot of work. Or that sounds like a big stretch. There are three things that I mentioned of Glenn Clark's that's repeated in Rhea's laboratory book. I'm just going to throw up and then I'm going to finish with a story. Practical advice for hearing God's voice in whatever form that God speaks to you. Hardly ever does the same way twice. Number one, tone down. In other words, turn off the noise. Whatever it is you need to do to relax, to focus on God, tone it down. There's so much white noise in our lives, and I don't just mean this kind of noise. So much white noise in our lives. You know, too much noise can make you actually nauseous. Tone it down. Whatever you have to do. Number two, turn on. This is Glenn's phrase, not mine. Turn on. Turn on your desire to connect with God. Maybe you don't want to connect with God, in which case, I guess, just be honest about that. But turn on your desire. I think of Jesus and my connection to Jesus often in musical terms. That's why it's been so much fun to be here. To be in harmony with God, to resonate on the same frequency, to make me an instrument of worship. If you're having trouble getting into this desire, just sit. We played this the other day. Sit and say, okay, Lord, if I was an instrument, what instrument am I? And listen for the answer. That could take you places. And tune in, meaning giving our full attention to God. Tune in, like that radio dial. Works much better. Analog is a much better visual than digital numbers. Analog, those of us still remember analog. Do you know that, and you know, I read this, tell me if it's not true, but I read that every musical instrument falls out of tune eventually, except for a tuning fork. I mean, does it sound like a good idea anyway, close enough? That we fall out of tune with God's voice. We all fall out of tune with being able to sing God's song. Very few of us have perfect musical pitch, and only Jesus had perfect spiritual pitch. So don't be too hard on yourself, but restore the tune. I want to just finish tonight with what happened to me today, actually. I have, obviously, as you do, some kind of pivotal stories in my life that seem to get told again and again and again because they're seminal to me and to who I am. But I actually had a really kind of cool experience today that might connect with you. And if it does, I hope it's a blessing for you. It was an incredible blessing to me. Today, during creative time, I took some creative prayer time. And I went out back over here, and I walked the labyrinth. How many of you have walked the labyrinth here? How many of you walked the labyrinth this week? Okay, there are a few still. Okay, great. Labyrinth is an amazing thing. It's kind of gotten some resurgence in the past, I don't know, 10 or 20 years. And I'm not going to get all of this right because I didn't take time to really research this. I wasn't planning on talking about it, but my understanding of some of the labyrinth work that we're re-experiencing comes out of some of the Celtic traditions. And it's, those of you who don't, unaware of labyrinths, there's this kind of very kind of beautiful, often kind of circular or other kind of patterned walking where you go in and out. You end up finishing in the same place you start. But it's a walking pattern that's really quite profound. It's often, for me, they're often thin places when I enter into that space where heaven and earth meet, where things can happen. I have never had the same experience twice when walking a labyrinth. Sometimes not much happens at all. In many terms, it may seem a little underwhelming. I go and take a nice little walk. Sometimes, it's pretty amazing. Today, when I went down to the labyrinth, I set an intention. Thank you, Kirsten, wherever you are. I've been learning to set intentions. And I said, Lord, what is my focus word for this labyrinth? And the word came to me, Tanya, awe, from this morning. Awe. So I stood right at the entrance and I said, Lord, I open myself to your holy awe. A-W-E, awe. And I stood at the threshold, and I crossed the threshold of the labyrinth. And I began to walk, open to holy awe. Now, a bunch of you know I have a pretty vivid imagination. So I don't dare say like this is like God, like this is a vision. I'm going to say in my imagination. But for me, it was some pretty holy stuff. In my imagination, every time I took a corner in the labyrinth, I looked back at the threshold. And every time I looked back at the threshold, someone from my life entered the labyrinth. People who were important to my spiritual development, people in my life who are in need of prayer, some who are living, and some who have died. And every time I took a corner, and you kind of go into the center and you come out, and you go into the center and you come out, and you go clockwise and you go counterclockwise, and every time I turned, I looked back at the threshold. And I just stood there to see who would enter and join me. I won't tell you everybody. A lot of them wouldn't make any sense to you. It would to Earl, but not to the rest of you. One of the people who came and joined me was a dear saint. Bill Chase came and joined me, who died of Parkinson's. But he came into that labyrinth all spry, bringing his bride, Louise, who is still alive and with us, but misses him terribly. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, these are past, present, and future people. Ben and Molly, the newlyweds, came in with their three children. Could be my imagination, I don't know. Little girl in a dress. Little boy, little baby in Ben's arms. Oh, yeah, you love timing. I have to say, Pat had two gentlemen come in and join me. One whose name was Dr. John Shaw, who was an old-time sugar loafer. And he came in with Joel. And they have both passed. They have never met, as far as I know, in this life, but they sure as heck knew each other there. And they were kidding each other and ribbing each other. And they were quite delighted that I had invited them to the party. Ronnie Burlack. There were some people that came into the labyrinth that were quite surprised to be there. In my imagination. Ronnie Burlack and Bryce Assel joined me. On January 5th of this year, they were skiing in Austria with the U.S. ski team, with my son, Sam. There was an avalanche that day. And those two 19-year-old boys were buried. They were really surprised to be in my labyrinth. And their parents, I thought only fitting they could come too and see their boys. And we're all just kind of walking. It would have been creepy, except it wasn't. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. They were saying hello to each other. People were meeting and greeting people who were important in my life, but they don't know each other. Only in my head do they know each other. Allison Murphy, 16-year-old who died on the hill a number of years ago. And Becky, another 16-year-old girl who died on narrow gauge. There were so many people. Sam, gosh, it's definitely my imagination. Sam came in with his unicycle. And of course, Earl and my family. And it was getting a little crowded in there, but there were always more. Surrounded by holy awe, I was. And surrounded by my cloud of witnesses. Some were chatting, some fell into a contemplative experience. And of course, as you can imagine, there were tears coming down my face the whole time. I went to the labyrinth, by the way, to stay cool. It was not cool. And why was it so powerful for me? I don't know. Except so often I feel alone. Serving God as I know how, but it is a lonely business. I love my work, I love my call, but I am far from a lot of support. I've been 25 years in the congregation I'm serving now, but in the fourth congregation. It's very transient. And so this was a great moment for me to realize I'm not alone, that all those people are still with me. And in that moment, that was outside of space and time, they were all in the loving, healing light of Christ, that they were all being made whole, past, present, and future, colliding in that thin place. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like I was back at the beginning of the labyrinth. Matter of fact, I had to turn around and make sure, because I was like, wait a minute, how did I be back at the beginning? I totally lost time. And I contemplated going back in. I said, oh, that's kind of cheating. I'm at the end. So I turned around, and in my imagination, I saw these people, and I turned to the center, and we all turned to the center and just covered them with God's healing light. Even those that were surprised to be there, covered in the peace of God. And I was able to step across the threshold of the labyrinth and leave them there, knowing that they were in the loving arms of God. I stand in awe of God, who transcends time and space. I believe that God is still speaking, and I spend my life to lean in and to listen, and I invite you to continue to join me in that listening. I'd like us to spend just 60 seconds in quiet and listening, and then we'll do the 9 o'clock prayer. Just take a moment. Just let this be for a moment. I feel moved to invite us to speak by name those in our past, present, future, folks we want to put in the healing light of God right now. I just invite you to just speak their names and hold them into the light of God. And keep your eyes closed, and you don't need to get up. Just hold a hand next to you. God's Spirit links us all together. But listen with your heart, even as you speak these words. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin.